Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never regarding reclaiming this Republic. And that debt is fraud. And learn, pray, act. Please use whatever your faith offers and provides you as tools in making change and obtaining those things that we need or seek. So anyway, every year I provide very specific content. And every Thanksgiving Eve, I try and I make a plea to those who listen to this show to make tomorrow or today, because I play this exact same show both on Wednesday and Friday, and I do this for one very specific purpose. I pray that you would share this with others. I pray that you would actually share this with your family so that you can seek to actually do something that was established. The standard was set. The die was cast back in 1789 when it comes to Thanksgiving. Now, we celebrate all sorts of holidays. And one thing I do know, because my message is a little bit different, we tend to really stream high on holidays because I think most people know that I provide a unique content. And in other words, it's not your typical best of like most of the entertainers do. I'm actually speaking very specifically regarding today. And as a matter of fact, this is going to be because I'm hoping to actually create a show that you can share, that you can actually proliferate so that every year, because this is really a Thanksgiving because of the election. I believe that we have the ability and there are tools, because I talked to you about learn, pray, and act in using, you know, this spiritual tool belt. And Thanksgiving is one of those things that should be a part of that, or at least it should be a day of significance. So this is why we're going to dive into this today. And so what you're going to get out of this show, because the content I cover for this particular show today, I plan on repeating this very show every year in Trump's presidency. Now, the last year of his presidency, when we have a new election, will determine whether, you know, we can try to do this, or, you know, whether I need to really revisit this and maybe do something different. But it will still be in context to Thanksgiving, because I always try to give you the significance of the day. Like every January 2nd, I give you the significance of the Tory Acts. And so what we're going to do today, even if I can't get everything in because the content is that important, we will post the entire show without the intros and without... Well, actually, I'll have the intros and the outros, but I'll probably not post the actual promo in the middle. And then after the end of the show, I will continue whatever content I still need to cover so that everybody gets the full benefit of all of the information. Because I want everybody to understand that Thanksgivings is not just this little thing that we happen to do to celebrate something that happened in the past. Thanksgiving was a normal process that was done when the events either required it or demanded it because of the outcome of events or what have you. So again, like I said, this will be a complete message when I get it posted. So that way I'm hoping, and actually, it will be posted, so it's already up there right now. So you can get the entire show tomorrow for Thanksgiving to play that if you don't have access to streaming at the time. You can download the podcast. Either way, we want to get people to start challenging, what in the heck are we doing? Why are we partaking in gluttony? Why have we lost the spirit and the appreciation for the benefits and the blessings that our good Lord has given us? I really try not to preach. I try to keep things in context to the Constitution so it doesn't come across as, you know, me seeming judgmental. You know, I may not be able to, you know, overcome your perception of me being arrogant, but I really try to be a humble person. I really try to be, you know, a good person that is open and, you know, willing to listen to other ideas and challenges and what have you. I mean, that's a whole part of being academic, you know, being able to put aside your paradigm and listening and looking. Because bottom line, I am in this position today because I've been doing that. When I first met Bob Schultz, I had no real appreciation for the First Amendment right of petition. And when I met John Durash, I didn't have a real appreciation regarding our common law. And so we've evolved. And this is an evolutionary process. And as a matter of fact, mankind has evolved over time. You know, we're always improving processes or we're going backwards, right? We're going forwards or backwards. And right now, America has been going backwards at breakneck speed. And we're close to the bottom, folks. We need to turn this around. And there are very specific things that we can be doing that would really make a difference. And Thanksgiving is one of those things. So this is why this holiday and this message is that important. I never skip this. And as a matter of fact, I am going to make sure it is a thorough message today. So as I kind of look at a macro view, because, you know, most historians, they drill into one, like the Whiskey Rebellion. They'll just drill in and give you all the details, like you get a real good detailed picture of what happened at that point in time. But very few people really kind of look at the earth, humanity, and all of the things that are happening all at the same time. What was going on in China at the birth of Christ? What was going on throughout the rest of the world, you know, at that one point in time when Christ was walking on the earth? And what is the relevance of that? Now, as we look at a macro view, I'm going to actually kind of focus it really more on his message, because when Christ walked the earth, he did some very specific things, obviously, and most people understand the atonement and the establishment of his church and the gospel and helping everybody come into him and all of that. But the real point of this is what happened after that. And as the a proselyting of Christianity moved forward, it continued to move forward based on his guidance, his message. And one of the things that they were fighting, and as a matter of fact, I think he even warned the apostles that they would all be sought out and murdered or killed, except for, I think, John the Revelator. That didn't happen. I think he was just incarcerated for the remainder of his life. And you know, there's speculation on did he die or what have you. But that's speculation, scripture, so forth. What I want to focus on isn't those details, or not those details. It was the message that went forward. And as they were combating this thing that was actually putting their lives in peril. As a matter of fact, in Corinthians, they were asking, I think it's 1 Corinthians 15, they were asking, why were they standing in jeopardy doing baptisms for the dead? And so as we kind of look at, you know, the peril of their situation, there was a nation, the world's empire, that was actually seeking out Christians to kill them. This was continuing. As a matter of fact, this continued for 300 years. Christians were being sought out, persecuted, and killed until Constantine decided that there was this jealousy. And I write about this in my first book. But there was this jealousy that Constantine couldn't get his own people, the Romans, to love him and to love, you know, the Roman government, where they would be willing to die. He couldn't get rid of the Christians. They were just, you know, popping up everywhere. And this is where they started using secrecy in, you know, determining whether you're a Christian, the half of the fish, so forth. Anyway, as Constantine basically shifted his feelings, instead of killing them, he wanted to adopt this so that he could control this and make it Rome's. And so he ended up creating the Roman Catholic Church. And so down this path, maybe he really had good intent. I don't know. But I do know what ended up happening was there were a bunch of perversions that ended up coming out from, and I forget the, that conference that he had where he was making the doctrine decisions and so forth. And that's not what's important. What's important is from that point forward, the church really started doing things that didn't immediately do this, but over time they evolved into doing things, ignoring the scriptures and doing things they shouldn't have been doing. And we've talked about Martin Luther, and we've talked about the Reformation of Christianity, because by this point in time, and as a matter of fact, the Enlightenment, Derek, really began around the 11th century. And in the 13th century, where we actually saw the Magna Carta come forth, and then in the 16th century, in the 1500s, when Martin Luther basically broke away from the Catholic Church, or the Germanic states did that, based on what Martin Luther did, we start to see this movement at a macro view. Mankind was starting to challenge this engulfed or this integrated form of government. Now, actually, I could back up because it was around Dante's Inferno. I forget the gentleman. I think his name was maybe Dante, but he wrote a book called The Demarchia, which in that book, it forced him to be banned by the church and the community that he was living in. He was actually cast out because of that book. And the Demarchia was a book where it talked about this migration towards a world religion and government. In other words, this globalism. And I think in that book, I've never read it, and I've never gotten a copy of it because I should, and but that doesn't mean go buy me one and send it to me. What that means is that this is one of those books that I would really like to read if I ever had the time, because I've read lots of other books that, you know, create challenging ideas. And I believe that this book, The Demarchia, was very similar to Plato's Republic, where Plato used whatever promptings from Satan in creating this view of this perfect form of status government, where government and religion were combined together. And I think Dante was was literally exposing the plan. And I think that's one of the reasons why that book was banned. He was banned. You know, the Catholic Church did not like what he did. And so they ended up forgiving him because he ended up coming back. And I don't know the real history. All I know is that that was a very significant publication. Just like Sir Isaac Newton, a little, you know, in the 16th century or 17th century, where he wrote a book disclosing the revelations of John and Daniel and making some comments that were heretical. In other words, he was creating a book that was going to be heresy in view of the French church. And so that book couldn't be published while he was still alive. He actually had to have that book published 6 years after his death, and he had a nephew do that because they had a law that they would dig you up and burn you in effigy if you actually, you know, were caught speaking of heresy, or they found you wrote of heresy. So that's why he waited for 6 years for that book to be published. Now, that book, that very specific book, was integral in, and I actually have that book, and it's up on my website. And you can find it on the Constitutional Articles page. But that book was integral in changing Jefferson as a young man. I think he was 16, 17 years old. When he read that book, it changed his view regarding organized religion in the colonies and the Anglican Church specifically. Now, as we look at the evolution of the churches as they started breaking away from the Roman Catholic Empire, this was kind of a sign that there was this period of the lifting of the Dark Ages and the beginning of Enlightenment, where they actually started actually openly challenging things, and that concept of challenging all ideas academically was embraced, that the freedom of academia was essential for Enlightenment. And that's why today, folks, we don't have the freedom of Enlightenment in academia. So, as we kind of move forward in this macro view, we can see how since the birth and death of Christ, this world had struggled in drawing nearer and nearer to him. And the desire, this innate desire within man, as we started recognizing that, you know, what we had was not truly him. And so this desire with Martin Luther, with actually even before that, with the Englishman and having liberty, these concepts of freedom, liberty, and the ability to choose for oneself, though that is his essence. That is the, I'll say this as a GRism, that is the plan of salvation, liberty, that all people must choose for themselves, whether he is their Christ or not. They have to learn and accept him. You cannot be forced into salvation. And that was some of the apostasies that the churches started seeing from the Roman Catholic Church and so forth. So anyway, as this started boiling forward, and we've already covered earlier this year the history of the evolution of the British monarchical theocracy as it moved into its own common law, moving away from, and the name of the common law, which if you actually look at the history, that's where the term was established. So in other words, what Britain did was instead of having the laws that were created, because back in old ancient Rome and the Roman Empire, they didn't have a declared constitution that was created like what we did. And the English people had kind of taken some shots at it, but they could never challenge the authority of the king because it was embedded and ingrained in their culture that the monarchies of Europe were divine leaders. That's one of the reasons why they were coronated, and that's one of the reasons why the people accepted and followed them until they became tyrannical, then they would revolt. But bottom line, they needed a new king, and they had to wait through, you know, the blood of secession to finally get a good king. Well, so anyway, King Henry, as we stated before, he wanted his divorce, so he got his divorce, and he broke away from the Catholic Church. And in essence, it took about 100 years, 70-some-odd years, something like that, for Britain to finally evolve to where they had their own theocracy, where King James actually created the Bible that would be the establishment of the British theocracy. The Bible was the supreme law of the land. Now, we saw that new Bibles and different Bibles, actually, as they were creeping up and establishing throughout Europe, was creating these different doctrines, and it actually started creating holy wars. The holy wars themselves kind of came out of the Holy War of the Crusades, where there was a clash between Islam and Christianity and Christendom. And so it just continued into these other wars. And one of the things that became heir apparent from Britain's evolution into its own Christian form. Now, let me just give you a good example of the difference between the Anglican Church and the Protestant faith. The Protestant faith was academically moved to actually create the Reformation by the people and the monarchs. In Britain, it was driven by the king and it was ruled by the king. And so many people viewed that as heresy. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why Britain was just filled with all sorts of variations of doctrine, why the Puritans wanted to get the heck out of Britain, why all of these people were leaving Britain for religious persecution. So you could kind of see how all of a sudden this free market, the desire for a free market of religion, not just commerce, but religion, was truly being laid out. And as we started moving forward, and as, you know, I'm really glossing over a lot of history, but as Britain started developing North America, you know, you got to remember that North America had already been opened up. The Spaniards and the Portuguese were already here since the early 1500s. And Britain didn't come along until about 100 years later. And so they only got what was basically left by the Portuguese and the Spaniards, that they didn't care for it. And it wasn't until Britain actually defeated the Armada to where they could actually safely stake claim into the new land, into the new America. And so they started creating their colonies in the areas where Britain wasn't entrenched, because trying to invade and take that over would have been a costly war, and it would have escalated other tensions and other problems. You don't want to just defeat the Armada and then start trying to fight a world war everywhere. So Britain kind of took this, I guess, the smart approach and used a commercial type of enterprise to open up the United States. And at that very same, or actually as that was developing, the concepts of these world markets and this mercantile economy was becoming, or I should say was becoming, the challenge to it was actually starting to really creep into society, because people really saw the evils of a mercantile system. So as everything started evolving, and as Britain actually started, you know, meddling and playing, you know, we already talked about the how it enforced slavery, all of these evil things of its manipulation in the Americas, along with the whole world. As we moved forward in towards the revolution, when Britain really started trying to make America pay for their revolutions and so forth that they, you know, that Britain wanted to execute and prosecute, that's when the Americans, or I should say the colonies, the colonists, demanded representation. No taxation without representation. They wanted representation. They were developed enough and were able to freely exchange commerce and so forth. They were, you know, almost 200 years old from the beginning of the settlements in 1602 and so forth. So they were at this point where they were challenging these things. And so as we kind of look, and this is all helping us get to this Thanksgiving point where we actually start talking about it. But the whole point is that in 1776, when we finally, when the straw that broke the camel's back snapped, that one year, the spirit of good and evil was pouring upon the earth. Because three key documents that forged the direction of good and evil literally were established. The first one we all know as the Declaration of Independence. The second one of good was Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. That was also published in 1776. The one document that very few people know, but you can read this in A Conspiracy to Destroy the Governments and Religions of Europe, of the Nations of Europe, that's also on my website, the PDF, you can get it, is a conspiratorial view of the Illuminati and the movement towards a global government and the secret society that would be created to establish this global government. Now, it is not. Nationalism is absolutely designed for a very specific purpose, you know, to maintain your autonomy. But when you read the U.S. Constitution, when we dive into this, and we're going to go into a break right here, but when you read the Constitution, one cannot use or view it and not see the idea of globalism under the banner of liberty under that Constitution. So we're going to dive into that. And then when we come back, then I'll get into the story and the history of Thanksgiving. So, you know, pardon my leave, but I think we need to cover this so that we can adequately cover history.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so what I'm trying to give you is the full context of the significance of the evolution of this nation and how it had to be a part of his plan that this Constitution be established, because it is the only government that has persisted this long that has created an open market for religion. Never has there been a nation that didn't try to create, until this one, tried to create an open market for religion. And even in the beginning, the open market was towards Christianity. But I digress. So as we saw, or as this evolved into this free market concept that came out of Adam Smith and then the Declaration of Independence, both of those two publications, it became very clear that, you know, this pie in the sky concept of freedom and a free nation that would offer those types of things, you know, was only theory. And yet we actually stood up and we were living in a time where an empire could actually be defeated because of its autonomy, or I should say because of the physical separation from the crown, or I should say where that empire resided, because stretching forces and traveling and projecting force to such a large group of nations, because when you look at the colonies, there were millions of people here. To inflict that will as we grew up and matured to a point where we demanded the rights of Englishmen, we had crossed that finish line. We had already gotten too big to be defeated. Not too big to fail, but too big to be defeated at the technology and the capabilities of a warring nation like Britain at that time. Just too big. It would have basically destroyed them trying to continually fight and fight and fight, because they couldn't fight all year. They only had certain points in time where they engaged in battle. And they realized that because the harsh winters over here were a lot different than the winters over there. So, and the travel back and forth across the Atlantic in the winter months was tough. Bottom line. As we started developing this nation, the men that were living at that time only knew what had passed. They only had a past view. They didn't have a future view of what to do, which is one of the reasons why when they stood up the new government, they created a republican form of government without a king. What it had was a all-in-one Congress. In other words, instead of a parliament, it was all in one. They didn't have the House of Lords and the House of Commons, where they separated. They thought that that was repugnant to actually have an aristocracy as well as the common folk representation. All people were to share representation. They didn't want to actually create a caste or class system. But they didn't see the brilliance or the importance of creating or actually taking the magistrate or the monarch and dividing the powers to where there would be a separation of powers within an within the government. So this was a concept that eluded everybody. This was a concept that actually, when we go through studies, a friend of mine who I went to school with a long, long time ago, we connected, and he pursued the history and study, antheology, the study of societies, men, and so forth. And there have been plenty of studies and surveys that have all concluded that the makeup of the Constitution, the complexities, and the simplicity of that complexity was not within the overall capability of the individuals, Madison, Jefferson, and so forth, that it really required both those, an amalgamation of men, as well as an outside influence, because these concepts were so new that even at the time, most of the people didn't realize, like the Electoral College, they didn't really understand it. They knew that they had to have some type of system and it was going to be external. But when they went forward, they really didn't define the Electoral College, which is why it went side. The concepts that were delivered and inspired are absolutely brilliant. The Constitution was not perfect, but for the time, I say it was. There were some things that they needed to fix, like the 11th Amendment, the 12th Amendment. But that all being said, the reality is this. If you believe in a supreme being, if you believe in a creator, and you understand the magnitude of wisdom of those, a person capable, or those types of people being able to create universes and so forth, obviously they would probably understand where and how we would probably evolve. If not, as a matter of fact, the scriptures even tell us, right? This is what's going to happen. And we're seeing those prophecies, and even ancient Israel saw prophecies come forward. We're seeing these things. So obviously the Creator had this divine wisdom and ability to know what we would be facing as a nation. So they created in this Constitution and in this new government a template. And they actually, one of the things that they did that absolutely sealed the deal in helping everybody understand the divine order of this union, of this concept of states creating a very limited and defined service government and allowing them to be able to work together in harmony, that the service government did not have the power and authority to basically regulate them and manage all of these things. So now what we need to do is cover a constitutional look at our very first Thanksgiving under this Constitution. So as we reach the point, as we are today, where we're getting ready to actually look at, and I want you to have this perspective that what we celebrate today was not the only thing that was celebrating Thanksgiving. As a matter of fact, there had to have been people involved in making the decision of what to do, because when we really started looking, and as we started looking at England and its evolution of its own theocracy, people started seeking this freedom of religion. So I believe it's imperative to actually start with the original reason for Thanksgiving. Seeking the right to worship as they wished, the Puritans signed a contract with the Virginia Company to settle on land near the Hudson River, which, and most people know this story, which was then part of Northern Virginia. The Virginia Company was a trading company chartered by King James I, with the goal of colonizing parts of the eastern coast of the New World. London stockholders financed the Pilgrim's voyage with the understanding they'd be repaid in profits from the new settlement. Due to a change in venue by the landing in the Cape Cod area, the two groups made a new compact on the Mount Mayflower on, here's a good, interesting date, November 11th, 1620. November 11th is Washington State's admission into the Union, the state of Washington's admission into the Union, which I'd love to get Washington State to stop recognizing Veterans Day, because November 11th also is Veterans Day, and start understanding the importance for Washington in becoming a part of the Union instead of making all of this hay over Veterans Day. As a veteran, I think the joining to the Union is far more significant than, you know, a person serving in the military. I mean, you can pick any day out of the year to do that, but that's the birth of your state. Do you put aside your birth because, oh, well, we got to recognize the veterans? Come on. Anyway, due to a change in the venue, like I said, they actually had to create this new charter. They came up with their own charter in doing this. When the Pilgrims landed and set up their home in the late season, Governor William Bradford basically instituted the compact that they created, and the outcome was socialism. And the outcome from that was called the Tragedy of the Commons. In 1623, Bradford abolished socialism, and then he gave each household a parcel of land and told them that they could keep what they produced or trade it away as they saw fit. In other words, he replaced socialism with a free market, and that was the end of the famines and the Tragedy of the Commons. But back to the original Thanksgiving, because that truly wasn't the original Thanksgiving of America. As a matter of fact, the idea of giving thanks for you to survive a very dangerous voyage going across was a very common thing. And as a matter of fact, many of the voyages that were coming across from Europe to the New World, every time they would basically land in a new area, the intent was to stake claim. So it was kind of a dual-rolled function of giving thanks and staking claim to the land for the furthering of the monarchical empire that brought you there, right? So on September 16th, 1619, the good ship Margaret, which was only 35 feet long and weighed 47 tons, set sail from Bristol, England, and 35 settlers commissioned to 8,000 acres of 30 miles west of Jamestown on the James River. The land was given to the Virginia Company by King James and is the current site of the Berkeley Plantation. The crew was compromised of settlers, and actually I don't know if the Berkeley Plantation is still the current site, but anyway, the crew was comprised of settlers, many of whom were craftsmen who were offered indentured status to settle at the site. In other words, they were coming with very specific skills so that they would be able to have indentured service and doing things. The Margaret arrived at Berkeley on December 4th, 1619, and those people actually went off the ship and actually started, you know, settling themselves. And actually, it was Captain John Woodliffe who immediately conducted the religious ceremony of Thanksgiving. And this is where they basically fasted, they prayed, and they thanked the Lord for basically getting them there, as well as making a declaration that this land now to be a part of the British king and, you know, serving the Lord. Anyway, as we kind of move forward, many groups, many colonists did this. And many groups continue to recognize, as a matter of fact, that very first point, as we just talked about, Captain John Woodliffe, and that religious ceremony, that was actually repeated, or they remembered it as an anniversary and, you know, basically gave thanks and continued to do that, just like the Pilgrims did later on. And I believe the Pilgrims, actually, what we celebrate is their Thanksgiving of 1622. So in Jamestown, less than half would survive their first 12 months in America, and this became most of the work was being done by only one-fifth of the men and the other four-fifths choosing to be leeches. This was basically a repeat. Every time we saw this in Jamestown and when they tried it up in New England, it always failed because there were always, like we see today, folks, we see how people game the system. And the majority of the people actually try to game the system. It's the ideologues. It's those who truly believe. Then they're the ones that actually do the work, and they're the ones that actually suffer at the hands of their leech, brethren or neighbors or what have you. The empirical data has proven that socialism is a failed ideology. Only when we are held to the same standard that we must be able to produce for ourselves, then we are truly tapping the potential of an individual and or a family. Nothing destroys individual worth faster than handouts, entitlement, or communal living. Even the hippies had to learn this, and this is why those communes don't exist today. Now, again, I'm going to jump to 1789. We've created this government. They actually formed this new republic, and President George Washington basically addressed the Union, and I'm going to actually read this in his proclamation, because when we actually dive into this, some of the things that is not well articulated is the concept of a unanimous Congress. In other words, when Congress called for George Washington to declare this proclamation of Thanksgiving, there wasn't a dissenting vote, folks. And when you actually understand, they were requesting that he set aside a day of giving thanks to the Lord, that there be a Thanksgiving. In other words, a holy day, like a Sabbath, in worshiping him and or serving him and fasting and praying. In other words, what George Washington did in the nation's first Thanksgiving was a call upon all the people of the nation. It wasn't a mandate. It wasn't, you know, you can't work. He was calling upon them to set aside the fourth Thursday of November to actually set aside. And if you think about it, if you were a farmer, you weren't harvesting crops by that point in time. By that point in time, winter had actually been, you know, bestowed upon us. And so it wasn't too hard for people to actually say, you know what, I am going to serve the Lord. I am going to fast and thanks, and we'll give our offerings of those things that we didn't consume on that day to those who can use them, to those who need help. Anyway, so at Washington's apprehension in this new Republican form of government was one of those things that he was very slow to act. Many times, as I've read before, he sought census. He wanted to find out whether people should do this. But one of the things that Washington didn't hesitate was to do this, because he was a spiritual man. Right, wrong, or indifferent, and all of the little things that everybody says about George Washington, there was no apprehension in him actually acting and calling upon the nation in this proclamation. And so you can find this proclamation on the Avalon Project. But what I want to do is actually just read this. And I've got maybe 9 minutes to do this. Let's see if I can get it all done. Whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor, And whereas both houses of Congress have, by their joint committee, requested me to, quote, to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their safety and happiness, close quote. Now, therefore, because he just wrote what they basically had sent him, this request. Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th day of November next, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being, with a capital B, who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be, that we may then all unite in rendering unto him, capital H, our sincere and humble thanks for his, capital H, kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation, for the signal and manifold mercies and the favor, able interpositions of, so in other words, he's pointing out how he interposed in their circumstances, able interpositions of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war, for the great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty which we have since enjoyed, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted, for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general for all the great and various favors which he has been pleased to confer upon us, and also that we may then unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications to the great Lord and ruler of nations, and beseech him, obviously he says, capital H, to pardon our national and other transgressions, to enable us all, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually. I love that. And punctually. To render our national government a blessing to all the people by constantly being a government of wise, just, and constitutional laws, discreetly and faithfully executed and obeyed, to protect and guide all sovereigns and nations, especially such as have shown kindness to us, and to bless them with good governments, peace, and concord, to promote the knowledge and practice of true religion and virtue, and the increase of science among them and us, and generally to grant unto all mankind such a degree of temporal prosperity as he alone knows to be best, given under my hand at the city of New York the third day of October. So, that was George Washington, 1789. So George Washington gave us the template for this nation of what we needed to do. And what more apt, what more appropriate thing could they have done to sanctify the Constitution and this new nation moving forward? Folks, I am humbled. I am absolutely humbled with the opportunity to be able to have this show and be able to share this type of content. I am not the author of this content. I am only that person that shines the light and delivers you their words, because I don't want you to take my word for it. I don't want to be your entertainer. I don't want to be the person that, you know, is basically taking up your valuable time. We don't have a lot of time, which is why this show always starts with, it's now or never. And so some of the things that, again, I have to emphasize that there's never been a unanimous call from Congress very rarely do they even get to a point where there's down to a single digit of a dissenter. But unanimous for a proclamation to serve him, to make a day of thanks, National Day of Thanks. This is a poignant message, and one everyone should read on an annual basis. It only makes me think, how did we get as a nation to enjoy, or who made the decision to select a festival of gluttony and giving thanks for, you know, our bounties by doing so in such an unrighteous manner? Folks, if you're really thankful for the things you have, it's not about just sharing them while you're eating them. It's to do without and then give to those who need. That is how we sanctify the blessings that we have, not through gluttony, not through filling the table up and filling our bellies with that and entertainment. We have Circus Maximus pouring into our houses via all these venues from the internet, cable, radio, airwaves, what have you. We've become a nation that has set aside this day where we could actually recognize this, the divine hand, the Creator's hand in giving us this nation and our liberties. And I believe that when we started actually buying into this acceptance of gluttony, I believe that that's probably when you'd find the beginning of how we were being manipulated and being debased as a nation. And you could probably look at where this happened. And as a matter of fact, to be clear, many presidents for decades called for national prayer and fasting and humility. Madison did this. And you've heard me talk about how Madison did this, and then in some cases, Madison actually kind of withdrew his calling for thanks because he didn't want it to be perceived as necessarily a religious expression. But most people would never have thought that Madison was so quick to call upon the nation to, you know, to fast, pray, and to basically sacrifice the day for him, so that we could have some blessings and benefits. Most people would never make that association to Madison. However, Abraham Lincoln also did this. As bad of a man that he was, he actually did call upon the nation to actually give thanks and fasting and humility. It is a tragedy that they do not teach this reverence that our forefathers had for the Constitution. We actually teach this disregard, and actually we teach children to actually defile and go against those things that are within the Constitution, which actually has preserved civility and this government for years and years. They want kids to get rid of their right to bear arms and so forth. So this is why this education has never been, you know, more critical than at this point in time. And so we need to start working. You have to become a part of the solution, folks. You're either going to be a part of the problem or you're going to be a part of the solution. And so I beseech you, and I'm really thankful that I could get this whole message into the show. I beseech you that you air this, you play this, not for my sake, but I ask that you air this and play this so that other people might actually hear and feel the yearning and the plea of restoring reverence towards our Constitution and giving thanks that from him or for him that blessed us with that Constitution and this great nation. We've made a lot of mistakes on the way, but folks, that was our doing, not his. And I think that if we get back to this, that's how we do it. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic review. Please read my argument for Republic review as well as my description of the Republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.